give you missed all of our witty banter already.
Yeah. Wow. It was banter.
That's hard.
Yeah. Right. Three, two, one. Welcome, dear listeners. This is episode 105 of the Devon Dice podcast, recorded on the 20th of August, 2023. In this podcast, we're going to have the usual news, crowdfunders and games we have played, plus a few extra bits added onto the end, so stay tuned. I am Joel Wright, the host of the podcast, and joining me tonight is Nick Shaw, the podcast resident board game designer and Link Master.
Hello folks, Link, Link, Link.
Link, Link, Link. And Sam, Clank fanboy and the podcast IT guy.
Yep, hidey, hidey ho.
Dr. Lewis sends his regards as he forgot that we were recording. You can't see Lewis. My scowling face at him. But anyway, maybe we'll have another decent length show again this week.
Yes. Not delayed by the curmudgeonly this.
But I hope we hopefully we'll do more than just read headlines for the news this time, which might be a little bit more interesting.
We ain't got such a long headline list, and we've also haven't got a guest this episode, but hopefully maybe next episode, so stay tuned. We have question from the Discord channel. Yes, we've got other people in there, not just us three slash point one when Lewis decides to join it. And he actually asked the question to us all, and we have answered this on a previous podcast, so I thought we'd just drop it in here again. And he wants to know...
Bakewoods.
So Bakewoods would like to know, what game would you like to see on Board Game Arena? Now, leaving
the
out
obvious
Clank.
Answer.
Yeah, leaving out Clank. I mean,
that's the automatic answer, isn't it? That's too easy.
But there is... If you back the last Kickstarter campaign... or for Clank Legacy 2, those that backed it would get a key to play beta or alpha beta version of their digital game. So I'm looking forward to getting that.
That'd be pretty cool.
Only problem with that is I'm assuming that'll be Steam based. I don't know if it'll be mobile based. So wait and see.
Hopefully it'll be both. I reckon so. So, Nick, what would you like to see?
Well, just thinking off the top of my head today, as this links in with some of the news articles, I'd love to see Orléans on there, actually. Ooh. I think that would work really well on BGA. I don't know who technically owns the publishing rights for that, for online stuff, but I think that would work very nicely as a, even especially asymmetric as well, would work very well.
Definitely.
And then Lewis might have a reason to join us on BGA then.
Sam, is there any game? I think actually...
There's too many. It's far, far too many. I mean, I'd love to see... the ones I think the ones that work best for me are the ones I tend to enjoy best are those where it takes a little bit more kind of management on the table. So it kind of takes away a lot of the... You know, we talked about it a couple of episodes ago where... When it simplifies things, that's the types of...
And
speeds up a game that would otherwise take a bit long.
It does all the housekeeping for you. That's
That kind of thing. So like Meadow is a very good example, I think, of that, where there's quite a lot of card management and deck management and stuff in between rounds as well. And it's just like, actually, that would just be a really slick, easy one to convert onto BGA. Lords of Waterdeep would be another one I'd love to see, just because...
I'm surprised that's not there, actually.
I think it's probably...
But the app does such a great job.
Yeah, that's true. If it has
yeah, you've got to spend like £8 on the game, haven't you? That's the trouble. Yeah. So, and now I've changed from Apple to Android. I've got to buy it again, so it's just like, I can't really be bothered. So, but I think that would be a good one, but I think the licensing of the Dungeons & Dragons license is probably a hard one to get over for that one. But now Asmodee own it, so who knows? Might be something that comes. I think for me, the one, and it's not one that I think takes a lot of time to set up and stuff, and I personally enjoy, love playing it on the table is Istanbul. But I think that would be one I play all the time.
That'd be brilliant.
If it was available online.
I do like Istanbul.
Yeah. And again, the mobile.
But it can be fiddly, can't it, to set up?
Mm. Yeah. I think it also, the benefit of playing it on BGA would be that you could randomize the setup and you could, you know, just click the option of the map you want to
It would be running so much quicker. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would handle all of the maths bits for you. Like, you go here, but it will kind of, you got to, and it will highlight the places you can go and. All that stuff. I think it's mainly because it's a game I love playing, and I just play it even more. And so, any game that I get a chance to play more of, I'd love to see on there, Bruni.
Indeed. Mm. Yep. And Joel?
I think for me, for a classic game, I would like to see Through the Desert on there. That's one of my favorite.
Oh, yes, the Quincy.
Yeah, one of my favorites. I don't know if Brass, I mean. That would be great.
Oh, yeah. That would be great to have on there.
And then, what was I thinking of? I'm looking at my collection because it's right behind me. Quacks of Quimmelberg. That could be good.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. So,
but yeah,
I can see Brass, quick as well. I can see Brass being on there at some point, to be fair.
Yeah, they've got.
I think there is now quite good. It'd be nice to see the updated figures if someone at BGA / the publishers could show it, but. I reckon there's still quite a good crossover of people that try it on BGA and then go and buy a physical copy of the game. So it's quite a good, potentially quite a good marketing thing. Because a good example was Ark Nova, right? I don't want to play Ark Nova, but I played it on BGA, loved it, instantly went out and bought physical copies. So, I mean, that must happen for a lot of other people as well.
Indeed.
Definitely.
I wonder how many, because there aren't any that I know of other Martin Wallace games on BGA. So I don't know if he's hesitant to do digital versions to license them. I don't know. Because others of his, like Snowdonia, would be really good as well, I think, online.
That's a good point. I don't think there are any Martin Wallace games. No.
I wonder if something crazy like Gloomhaven would work on BGA as like a... If it did all the management for you and you could do it with friends as a campaign, would that make it kind of... That'd easier to run, but I mean, you'd have to dedicate yourself to multiple gameplays.
But also, I mean, they have got the Gloomhaven actual kind of video game ish on Steam, haven't they?
Right.
Yeah.
And they've got the RPG coming soon.
Hell of a thing to program for the. Oh,
it would be. But it would do all the map for you, do all the combat calculations and.
Yeah.
Be an interesting one. Or in fact, any legacy game would be interesting, like doing like a Pandemic Legacy. I wonder how that would work online, because that's something I don't think got any of those apart from My City.
My City is the only one, and that was a bit kind of. I don't know about you, because we played a version of it, and just kind of got a bit kind of still going on with this.
Yeah,
still putting the same tiles down.
I think that's down to that game more than.
I don't know. I enjoyed the physical version when I played it.
I wonder if it works better as a tactile physical game on that one. Whereas Pandemic Legacy, there's a lot of bookkeeping and remembering the new rules in Pandemic Legacy. I wonder if that would be... Yeah, I wonder how that would work, if that would be a possibility.
Hmm. Quick update. There is one Martin Wallace game on BGA.
Oh, yes? Oh, yeah. Which one's that?
Tinner's Trail.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is another example of a game I played on BGA first and then went and bought a physical copy. Because, again, I like
it. Yeah,
it's not a surprising one where it's like, I won't like that. It looks really crap because the original print looked horrible, didn't it? But the Alley Cat one
does really look nice.
So I went and bought that one. But, awesome. More please, Mr. Wallace.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. Get to it.
All right, on to the news. All right, Nick, take over. I'm going to sleep.
Yeah, so this is one that I was hoping Lewis would be on, because then we could discuss it. But there are two Orléans-related ones. The first one is a new game announcement, Cathedrals of Orléans, which is billed as a family weight co-op game in the world of Orléans, where you are all working together to try and build the Cathedral of Orléans within a certain time frame. There's not a huge amount of information about it yet. It's just some images and a small summary. But it does look a lot like Orléans. It's got the same artwork, same artist. It's got the Worker discs as well are placed on various places on what looks like a shared central map. I'm not entirely sure because there's only one image of it, but it looks something like that. But it looks like a much more family weight level version of Orléans with the worker placement and bag building. So that sounds quite interesting. So I'm looking forward to hearing more of that. That's, I think, due round about Essen time. And then the other Orléans related one is a new expansion to the original Orléans called The Plague, which again I think is due out this year. And this is, it sounds like more of a mini, sort of a mini expansion, more than a full blown expansion like the other two were. But this has the idea of corpse tokens that you get, everyone can get at the end of a round where they have to go in the bag, and they're basically like the rubbish cards you get in a deck builder. These are rubbish tokens you get in your bag, and they don't do anything if you draw them out. They just fill up space in your market. And then you can get rid of them by visiting a plague doctor or by fulfilling indulgence cards. So I really like that idea. I think that would be really interesting to have things that clog your bag in Orléans. So, yeah, very little information on that so far. But again, that sounds like an interesting one, those two.
Definitely.
So, Lewis, yeah, you can look at those. Oh, you won't listen to this anyway, will you? But I'll tell him about those. The next one on the list I found was Boone Lake, which was a game by Alexander Pfister from last year, I think that came out, or 2 years ago maybe. And this is Boone Lake Artifacts, which is a new expansion, which looks like a proper decent-sized expansion. This adds on another section of river for the boats to move around. And it has a little sideboard onto the end of your board as well, with variable tiles on and a whole load of more cards, where you're collecting, it looks like you're collecting vases, which then you can exchange for various powers or something. Again, very little information because this has only just been announced in the last couple of weeks. Again, this looks like it's probably going to be an Essen release or an Essen demo. So that'd be nice. I really enjoyed Boone Lake, although I've only played it the once. So this might add some more, give me a reason to play that again, which would be quite cool.
Yeah. I never played it.
It is classic Alexander Pfister, and it's got an interesting action selection mechanism. It's worth trying. Yeah, it's a lot of interesting stuff in there, quite crunchy. And then the last one I found was a game called Evacuation, which is a new Vladimir Suchy game. And this is coming again, probably Essen. And in this game, you are trying to evacuate your population from an old world, which I think is meant to be Earth, which you have fully polluted and exploited, and it's dying. And so you are trying to move everything to a new planet, a new Earth that you found. And what hooked me in this, really, the interesting bit is that you're not just moving your people across, like pick up and deliver, you're actually moving your factories. So it's like an engine builder where you start with a fully built engine on one side on the old planet, and you're having to remove that, transport it to the new planet, and rebuild it on the other side on the other planet. So it's pick up and deliver, but you're picking up and delivering your engine that you're using to power everything. So you can use your factories on the old world to generate resources, which let you build the ships to load all the technologies and the people onto there to then move to the new planet. And then you need some more resources to then build onto that planet. And then that side of the planet will start producing resources. And wherever the factories are on whichever planet, they only produce for that planet. And you can't move stuff from the old planet to the new, sorry, from the new to the old planet. You can only go in one direction for moving stuff. So it's classic Vladimir Suchy kind of really crunchy, heavy Euro style rule set, but yeah, looks really interesting. I've had a read through the rules, and it sounds more interesting to me than a number of his previous ones. Say Woodcraft was okay. I like Woodcraft perfectly fine. Underwater Cities, I know a lot of people really like Underwater Cities. I was lukewarm on Underwater Cities. I still prefer Terraforming Mars, but this one looks like it's really up my alley. This kind of style with the engine build, the reverse engine build, and then the re-engine build, and the pick up and deliver. Sounds like a really fun combination.
I think one thing you can rely on Vladimir Suchy for, though, is that kind of those takes one interesting kind of concept mechanically and yeah. runs with it. And like,
indeed,
I know what you mean by indoor cities. I personally prefer that over Terraforming Mars, as we discussed on Discord.
Yes,
but I really like that kind of action selection with the cards bit in Underwater Cities. Obviously, that was like the concept he came up with, and then other stuff like the themes kind of obviously wrapped around it to some degree. But I do love how he always tries to think of a kind of a different way of using familiar
unique
mechanics.
Crystal things.
Definitely. Yep. It's on my Essen pickup list. So
cool.
Definitely will be trotting over to that store to have a look at it in further detail. So
indeed. So that's all the news that I found this week. So on to crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding. So I put this one in because it popped up, it popped up somewhere and I was like, ooh, what's this game? And then went on to Kickstarter and had a look and I was like, oh, this is interesting. It looks quite detailed worker placement game and it's called Ascendancy. The ultimate worker placement meets 4X fantasy board game. Paul Grogan has done a playthrough, and what I saw of it looked pretty decent. It is worker placement, but it's also got like the whole exploring a map. The map's not that big. I mean, it's probably, I don't know, about,
I'd say
20,
like a mini hex map, isn't it, really?
Yeah, about 20 mini hexes. And you can fashion it to however you want to play. You can be cooperative, you can be PvP, you can go solo. There's a mini campaign that actually brought in a little legacy concept to it. And it's all quite... everything looks great, and what I liked about it is it's overproduced for a start. Everything comes in these pre-made trays, you could play over a certain number of years, and each year is different phases, and you have different workers. And the lowest form of worker can only go, or different levels of workers, and the lowest one can only go into the first phase of that year. And you all place, and then once everyone's placed their worker, then you action it in a certain order. You can be gazumped by someone else if you've taken the space they want, but they have to put a worker from a higher level into that phase, and it kicks them out, and that player gets a worker back and they actually can reuse it again. But the trouble is, if you do that in a previous phase with a worker from a future phase, you then can't use that worker in the future phase, so you're kind of trying to balance it up. And I actually saw some quite good tactics of in the video that Paul Grogan did with a couple of friends playing it, that one person says, well, actually, I don't really want anything from phase four, so I might use this worker that's for phase four and use it here to kick you out so I can get what I want from here. And it was like quite tactical like that, and there's like fighting monsters, gaining powers, building buildings, and things like that. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot of stuff there.
There is a lot of stuff, and I think if you put it on the table, it would scare a lot of people away. But I think when you get to the crux of it, it's actually quite simple in a way. It's place workers, gain resources, build this, do that. As I said, it's overproduced, so it's a nice kind
But for the core game is only £77. I mean, that's for what you get, that's amazing price.
Yeah, definitely. And this is only Kickstarter, so there will be no retail version. So that's Do I do this? And in the past, when they have said this is only Kickstarter, then it's actually come back out into retail.
It's a slightly different version or something. So it's not.
Was it Monumental?
Or they'll have an expansion in 6 months' time where you can get the base game again.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they?
I mean, that's fair enough. They run another Kickstarter for another print run, which is.
So, but this is doing a lot better than Call of Duty, the board game, is doing.
Yeah,
I am so surprised they have not cancelled this yet. Call of Duty, because it's still not reached 200,000 in its funding.
Really?
And I was mistaken where I said, what's the other shooty, shooty, bang, bang game that was out on Kickstarter?
Rainbow Six?
No. I'm so tired. I've just been cut back from camping, so I'm now just trying to think my way through stuff. Apex Legends.
That done
over 800,000 in funding. So I'm really surprised they're still going with this and they've not cancelled it.
I wonder if they'll get, they're hoping for a late boost, because Rado did a run through of it just the other day.
Yeah, but they're still,
and he really liked it. And that might,
I mean, he likes everything. Oh, that's the trouble. Everything Rado does is,
well, that's true. But he also does have that Rado influence where it will significantly bump a project.
I think this is not destined to be any, you know, it's like, what, 42 hours to go. There's not going to be a significant jump. I mean, it might get to 200, maybe.
Yeah, if it's not jumped a lot, then it's under 48 hours already.
Yeah. I think the trouble is that we kind of may have talked about it before, but I think the core audience is somewhat different for a Call of Duty game.
Yeah.
Because your average Call of Duty player is not going to play the board game.
No.
And the Venn diagram of board gamers that will also play Call of Duty and want to play a Call of Duty board game is tiny compared to...
Is Joel.
Yeah.
It's exactly, me in the middle.
You're the one backer. Yeah. You backed it 100 minutes.
Yeah, I'm the one that's still keeping it alive.
Yeah.
So
but this what, one, Ascendancy, yeah. Look, yeah, it's doing well.
It's does look very well. So
almost £250,000.
So yeah,
it's got some fun bits in it.
I've got a little.
Matter of fact, it's got one point. It says infinite replayability, and then a small subtitle underneath: until the next hotness.
Yeah, they nice tongue-in-cheek kind of. So yeah, I'm kind of like, oh, do I pull out a Call of Duty and like back this? And I don't know. So we'll see. We will see.
Yeah,
kind of Nick, take us to Marrakesh.
Yeah, so this is just went up last week. This is a new expansion to Marrakesh, which is Stefan Feld's new game that came out last year, I think. And this is called Camels and Nomads. And it adds in 6 new modules and a solo mode. I did not work on the solo mode, I can say that now. So I'm unbiased on this. I don't know much about what it adds, because I have not played the original Marrakesh yet, because it was such a ridiculously expensive box. But this has the opportunity, if you want to buy the original, including the what they call the Essential Edition, which is the cheapest edition without all the extra bling. And so you've got multiple different levels of backing depending on which version you bought originally, which makes it slightly confusing. But yeah, it's more Stefan Feld goodness. That's always good. And I do know that Marrakesh has had a lot of good reviews. The one small thing, I guess, is it is Queen Games, and they've been doing some odd projects recently, and oddly priced projects.
Mm.
So the expansion, just the expansion, is £44, which is quite a lot. I'm just seeing if if you want to buy the actual original Essential Edition and the expansion, it's £106. So it is very expensive for what you get, but
also factor in $36 for shipping.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
it's a lot of money.
It is, yeah. But if you like Stefan Feld games and you like Marrakesh, then this might be one to look at.
It's like,
yeah, I remember seeing. I think it was at UK Games Expo. Certainly, it's like the base game there, with like just Essentials version, was like 70-odd quid or something. It's just like, holy moly.
I mean, it is a big box. It's like an Amerigo-style size box, because it's got that big dice or cube tower, which people bemoan doesn't work properly. I think they revised the design of it for the second edition to make it work a bit better. That's what it is.
Camel Up is like one of the expansion boards, so...
Yeah.
Right. Camel
it is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they've stolen that lately from Camel Up.
Yeah, that's the trouble with Queen Games. It's like they keep putting this out on Kickstarter, and they're just quite highly priced for my liking.
Yeah, it's odd how expensive they are, because the quality doesn't look any necessarily better than games of the same ilk, which are much cheaper. But they clearly are selling, so fair play to them.
It's the Steffenfeld effect, I guess. It's just
it's the failed effect, yeah.
It's the people that must have.
Failed fanboys.
Of which there's a great number, I think. So.
There are, yeah, yeah. I mean, I do. I love failed games, but yeah, the most recent reprints are all beyond my price range to justify, especially as I own the originals, most of the originals. And the last one on the crowdfunding list, which is one that's it's popped up a few times in my Facebook feed, so I thought I'd mention it because it looks quite fun, is called Tiny Laser Heist, a hilariously awkward 3D heist game. And this one is, it has a 3D cubic structure, so like a 3D frame, in which there are elastic bands traversing in multiple directions like lasers. And inside those elastic bands, there are gems which you're trying to steal, which are covered up by a number of padlocks, colored padlocks. And you and your teammate, because it's played in teams, I believe, both have one stick, one hand stick, and you're both together trying to lift the padlocks off and move them onto other places to then get to the gems without knocking the elastic bands off. So it looks like a fairly hilarious dexterity style game. It's worth watching the Kickstarter video for it because it looks a lot of fun. Very silly, very light, but for what I think for what it is, then it's a decent price.
This just screams Hasbro kind of all over it. But
oh, it does. Yeah, it looks like kind of that those games you get in the mass market like Pie Face and stuff.
It's what Hasbro should be doing instead of if they wanted to be serious about gaming, as opposed to all that crap with the dribbly mouthpiece and all that stuff.
Yeah, because I'm sure this would probably sell in mass market, I would say. But it has some strategy to it because you've got decks of cards that you need to use together to be allowed to move certain colors of padlocks and things. But yeah, with the fact that two people have to use the hands together to push the locks and move them around, it's very
clever in a very simple clever sort of almost like a party dexterity.
It's
game.
A party game, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
good. It looks good. I mean, got me intrigued. £40 for the base. That's not bad.
Yeah. And they're well past their funding goal. There's another 12 days of sort of data recording.
$59 for the extras and expansion. So
it's
not bad.
I don't think
you
necessarily need
the
expansion,
shipping's
UK shipping is $8. Take note, Queen Games.
Whoa,
that's expensive. Whoa, what are
$8?
They thinking?
$8.
They're missing out on a money coup there.
At least we don't live in Canada or New Zealand. Then it would be.
Oh yes. They have to pay so much. Poor things. So that was all our crowdfunding for the week.
Awesome. Straight. Well, we're doing right. Good for timing. Anyway, on to games we've been playing. So, Sam, you want to start us off here and go back to
Classic. So having talked about Steffenfeld and may have got an undercurrent of I'm not really a big fan of Steffenfeld games, I played Castles of Burgundy for the first time properly yesterday. I have tried it on BGA before and hated it because the version that was on BGA at the time was the dirty, everything is brown kind of affair, and I just couldn't.
Oh, you mean the best version?
Yeah, the best version to play if you're playing against colorblind players, because there's not a chance if you leave them to do it. It's not going to happen. I was just like, I'm out. I'm never playing this again. And plus, I mean, it also had that typical vibe in my mind. It's a typical Feldish game where it's mechanical. There is a theme, but it's very, very pasty, nothing really.
It's pasted on Point Saladi.
Yeah, there's no real theme to it, right? But I was told, oh no, the 2019 version is much better. I was actually playing with another colorblind player, and he was like, yeah, this one's fine. I've had no problem with it. I think I'll give it a go. It's obviously a very popular game, and I kind of need to... know what I'm talking about. It's almost exactly the same sort of situation that I had with Ark Nova, which is like everyone loves it, so I need to know what it is that I'm missing out on a bit. And actually, we played it, and it's kind of easy to play, and I enjoyed it well enough. The one I would say it's probably my second favourite Feld after Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. But I think it still suffers from the same thing, where it is literally the pasted-on theme. It is a purely mechanical puzzle that you're playing with.
Absolutely,
But I do like the fact that, unlike many other games, it does have good interaction in the sense that not so much interaction directly with the people you're playing, but you need to...
Yeah, you can't affect what they're doing, but you can snipe them on the tiles that they want and stuff.
Exactly. So you've got to be anticipatory. Do you spend your workers to sort of change the value of the die to get the boat that you really need, because it probably won't be there when it next comes around and all that sort of stuff. So you're constantly paying attention to what other people are doing, what they're collecting. Am I going to get that zone filled before the other players, that kind of stuff. I actually did enjoy it, much to my own surprise. I certainly won't be buying my own copy, but I'd happily play it if other people have said, do you want to play this?
Come and play my copy. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's hear about your copy, Nick.
Yeah, so I received the Castles of Burgundy Special Edition last week, which is the new version that Awakened Realms produced in association with Alea. So they put together with Alea and Rosenberger for that. And this is the one that has acrylic tiles for all the tiles. It's got all the boards that have ever come out in four copies of each one. So there's four copies of, I think, 30 boards. So you can all play the same variant if you want to. And it's got overlays for the boards. It's got dual layer boards for all the bits. It has the Vineyards expansion, which is a brand new expansion for this edition, which has a quadruple layered board, which is interesting, and double hex tiles for the Vineyards. And so I've been playing this with my son, who hasn't played it before, but this is, Castles of Burgundy is close to probably my favorite game. So I absolutely love this. Small caveat is that I did work on the solo mode for the special edition. So John Albertson and I designed the solo mode for that. But it's a classic Feld, and I owned the original 2011 edition. Oh, I still own that edition. And so getting this edition was kind of a no-brainer, and it's an absolutely beautiful production. If I wouldn't say rush out and buy it if you are not sure about it. So Sam, I definitely wouldn't say rush out and buy it, because it is very expensive, but it is absolutely beautiful. It's amazing. The artwork has been completely redone on all the tiles, on all the board, and the box artwork. I got it with a playmat as well. So the playmat is the board for the 4 and 2 players, double-sided. And it's just a beautiful production, and the acrylic tiles are really nice to feel. They all come in bags as well, so you can draw the bags rather than having stacks of tiles to refill. You just draw them out of the bag. The Vineyards expansion is nice. It's certainly not necessary. It adds, I would say, kind of like a distraction to the main game. So if one person entirely focuses on the Vineyards and the other players don't, then that player is guaranteed to win pretty much, because it can really, really boost your points if you're not challenged on it. Because I think the highest level tier, you can get 91 points from your Vineyards. But if everyone does a bit of it at least, then it's nice and competitive with the Vineyards expansion. So I've only played 2 players so far with my son. So looking forward to playing with more players. Absolutely beautiful.
I'd say the one thing I can see from the pictures is that there's 2 things that I take away from it, having literally played it only yesterday. The buildings look much more distinctive than the sort of more flat
version.
And the animals are much more distinctive, which helps too, because sometimes you look at the animals going, what the hell is that meant to be?
they're nice illustrations. They did replace chickens with goats, which was quite slightly sad, because I did like the chickens.
The chickens, because there were goats in the version I played yesterday.
Oh, so they might have been in the 20, because I've not played the 29 edition, because the contrast on it was just did my head in when I looked at it. I had no need to really have that version. The original had chickens rather than goats.
Gotcha.
The one thing I will say is a slight niggly bit is that the monastery tiles, which are the yellow special tiles, they're called technology tiles in the original edition. The illustrations on those for what the tile scores for are absolutely minute. And they are really, so the ones that say you get 4 points for every like Carpenter's Workshop at the end of the game. The picture of the Carpenter's Workshop on that tile is teeny weeny. It's probably about half a centimetre.
Yeah, it's exactly the same
square. Sort of, very, very small.
Those look exactly the same as the one I played yesterday as well.
Yeah, I think that comments have been that they're even smaller than that version.
Yeah,
which is puzzling. But they did also it came with cardboard versions of the tiles as well. If you wanted the cardboard, and on the back of all the cardboard tiles, it's got textual description of what that tile does, which is for new players is incredibly useful. Although it does come with really very nice and very good player aids, which explain all the buildings, which I use that. And my son's 11. I said, just look at the player aid it tell you. And he was quite happy with that. So you don't need to have that text on the back. But for those people who might find that useful, that is an option.
Very good side-by-side comparison of all three versions and the pictures.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, so you can see like the difference from like the original version to the 19 yes. version to this version. So it's like,
So that's the other thing, is these tiles are 30% bigger than the previous editions. Yes. So it takes up a lot more table space, but it's much more readable in that sense. It's just generally everything's slightly larger. Hmm. Apart from those illustrations, I think they're the same size as the original tile. So that was the first thing I played. What else have I played? I played with the guys at the game group. I don't know how to pronounce it. Is it Gentes or Gentes? I never know which one it is.
I thought it was just
I think it's Gentes because it's Latin. I don't know if it's a soft or hard G. That's what Edward from Heavy Cardboard said when I watched his video on it the other day. Gentes. So yeah, we played Gentes, and this was the TMG Deluxified Edition that Ian had that he picked up just before TMG went bust. And it's a very nice production. And Gentes is a game, it's a civilization building-ish game where you are trying to score the most points from cards that you're playing out into your tableau and from building the buildings out on the map. But it has a very interesting action selection mechanism where you've got four or five areas on the board with action tiles on. And you can either take one to get more cards into your hand, you can take them to play cards out from your hand, you can get them to adjust your workers that you have. You have six different classes of workers, and you can take them to build your buildings out onto the map. And it's a very interesting economy because all of those actions interweave between each other. So you have to do one to do another, but then you have to do that to do another bit, then another bit, you need another bit to do that. And so it's all very interlinked in that way. And it was really quite a fascinating design and a fun game to play. I really enjoyed it. You have to manage your money. Money is very tight. You have to manage your time. And depending on which actions you take, you can do more powerful actions, but they take more time, which means you get less actions overall in the round. So you're managing your money, you're managing your time, and you're trying to get your cards out to give you special powers that are ongoing and to get points. We played a three-player game of it. And that was with a rules teach as well. It took us about 2 hours. So it was a pretty good run. So one that I really enjoyed. I don't know how available the Deluxified Edition is at the moment, but the original version, which I think is the Spielworks version, is still available. I saw one advertised today for just over £30. So it's just the one with cardboard. This one, the deluxe version, came with kind of shaped wooden pieces for various bits and pieces. So it was a good one.
Nice.
Joel, let's hear from you. What have you been playing?
I have been playing two games of hide and seek, basically.
Yeah. That's true. Yes.
I have. So two hidden player, hidden role. Not hidden role, hidden movement games.
Yep.
One was called Beast, which is quite a popular game that's just delivered from Kickstarter. There's a new expansion being put out on, I think it's Kickstarter or one of them. New expansion coming on GameFound. So you'll probably be able to pick it all up there. It was big at UK Games Expo. They had a nice big stall, so you could actually pick up copies there, I believe, and play it. But I just recently played this now, heard good things about it. So again, it's basically one versus many or one versus one, depending how many players you've got in it. One person is the beast, and there's multiple beasts you can be. They've all kind of from mythological legends. So the one we were against was Mad Hog. No, Bad Hog. I think it was Bag Hog or something like that. And it actually quite funny. It like you get like boards for each one, or the person who run it gets a board and its own screen and things like that to do it. And then they, like all hidden movement games, the person that's hiding, marking their location on like a small board behind their screen, and making notes and things like that. And the other people are trying to hunt him down and work it out. And it is quite good because, like, basically we're trackers. We've been hired by the locals to get rid of this nasty beast that's wrecking their lives. And so we've basically got to go through like the tracking system. And quite simply, if you walk onto, so the beast will move. Will play. You all play cards. That's the great thing about this game. Actually, I'm going to get all mixed up. The great thing about this card is you do this draft at the beginning of each round. And you draft cards, and you do this all because the top part is for the hunters, the bottom bit is for the beast. So you can see, well, if I pass these cards to him, he's going to get this action. Oh, I can't let him have that. But I really want this card because it will allow me to do this. And you're learning that conundrum of what do I pass on, because you're basically drafting like Seven Wonders style. So you've got that aspect going on. You can see what's been passed on. He's seen what's been passed on, and you draft your four cards out of it. Each hunter starts with their own deck of cards, and the beast starts with their own cards as well. And you add these collected cards together, and then you begin the round. And the beast will play a card or play two cards, and they might move, or it might do something. It might let them activate ability. And if they move, they take their movement, whether they move north, east, south, or west, and they take these cards and they put them face down on this kind of row. So he says, oh, I've moved this many spaces. You don't really know. You know where they started, but you've got to then kind of work out which direction. They all have a goal to meet, and each one's different. And the one we were playing against, he had to basically kill two people. So there's village, there's farmers, and there's lords. So you have to kill two of them by the end of the third night. And we just basically had to stop him or stop him from completing these goals. And then once he's moved and played his two cards, then we each have a go. And you just keep going around like that until everyone's played all their cards and passed. And if you move and you go onto a trail where he's put cards down, he has to put like down a token to say it's a footprint. And you're like, right. Oh, I'm on his trail. Okay. So what direction did he go next? And so if you've got extra movement, then you can keep moving and trying to keep his, on his trail. And then you can actually kind of work out, actually, he can't go any further. But you have to search, and it might be another action. It's on the card. And then once you search, he has to expose himself. Not in that sense, but has to say, yeah, I'm here. And if you've got enough actions between you, you can try and attack him. He has a certain amount of life. You've got a certain amount of life and things like that. And once he can move again, he will disappear off into the woods. And then you have to get down on his trail again. You can, it's really clever. You really felt involved discussing your tactics, how you're going to get in there. I mean, they can hear all your tactics you're discussing, but yeah. It was like really like, well, if I play this, and I was showing the cards to the people I was working with and saying, well, if I play this, does this help? And they're like, yeah, do this. And my character and my special ability was transforming the square I'm in into a kind of village or hut, and that really had an effect on the bad hog that we were playing against, because he uses certain terrain to do certain powers, and every time I was getting in his way, I was putting down a hut, and he was like, for crying out loud, stop. And I was just, I'm just urbanizing the forest, like it's gotta meet like modern times and things like that. And it's so funny, when we got to the end of the game, we lost out by a life point. We just needed one more hit on him, and he killed the last person on his next turn. There was no way around it. We was like, need one more, and we couldn't do it. But we got to the end of it, and we read out the back of the bad hog, and it basically said he was pissed off with all the building and the deforestation going on around him. So he went on a mad rampage. And it was basically what I was doing throughout the game. So it was brilliant. I really enjoyed that. The other one I've been playing is Sniper Elite, the board game. Again, it was another Kickstarter. I kind of backed it for $1 and didn't go through with it. Slightly regretted after it, now playing the actual game. Because, again, it's another clever hidden role game. This time I played as the sniper, who's got two objectives to do. And you're just trying not to be shot by the Germans, who are basically patrolling the grounds. It really does give a sense of like the video game. And I've played that quite a few times, where if I sneak crouched in the video game, no one hears me. But if I run and I run past soldiers, they'll hear me. And it's the same as this. So they can't see me. But if I plot my course and I've run three spaces, which is the most I could do, and I've gone next to people, then I have to say, these two heard something. And they're like, oh, well, where can he be after this? So they know why I'm telling them that, but I'm not exactly telling them. They could walk into my space and I don't have to reveal myself because I'm hidden behind like junk or stuff like that. The shooting's quite clever. It's a bag pulling thing. So you've got aim tokens, you've got recoil tokens, and you've got noise tokens. You need as many aim tokens to come out as the distance between you and the person you're shooting. And again, you don't have to tell them who you're shooting at. You just say, I'm going to shoot someone. And then you pull the tokens out. And if you get enough of the aim tokens, you say, this guy's dead. And they were looking and said, well, he's got four aim tokens. So he's within four spaces of that dead person. Okay. If you get ricochet, don't really do anything. But if you get like five ricochet and noise tokens together, you completely miss. If you pull two noise tokens out, then you have to reveal your location to the Germans. So it's one of those. Other things can do it. If you get a good hit, you put another aim token in your bag and things like that. And you're basically trying to move around without being spotted, get into your objectives, which are marked on the board. And then that's it. You just need to connect, complete two objectives within 20 rounds-ish. You've got 10 rounds to do the first one. If you get to the first objective, or your first objective, and you say, right, I've completed this objective, the counter resets back up to 10 rounds. So you get another 10 rounds to complete the second one. So it's quite good like that. The Germans, however, there's always going to be three groups or three units. So depending how many players are, depends how many they get to control. So if you've got three other players, they will each control a unit or squad, I should say, of three Germans. If you're playing with two players, they will control one each and then they will share the third one. And if you're playing against one other person, then they control all three. They have an officer, which will have a special power. And they're basically, they can move only two spaces. They can search areas. They can spot areas. And they can attack areas. They can only attack in the space you are, unless they've got a special power. And they have to hit you twice to kill you. They can't do the same action with the same unit, but they can do the same action with different units. They can take in any order they like. So they get two actions per squad, and they can do it in any order they like. Yellow squad can move, do one action, then the black squad can do an action. Then the yellow squad actually, oh, I think he's here and I'll shoot here, and then so on and so forth. The only game-breaking thing I think the Germans have is for their two actions, they can do like an area search. So each map is split into four sections, five technically. where there's a yellow section, a red section, a black section for each squad, and that's where they will spawn. If you shoot them, they come back in. That's where they come back in. And there's also two grey areas. If the officer is in their coloured section, they can do like an area search, and they basically say, I'm doing this, I want to search all this whole area. I can't think of what they call it now. But do a scan this area, and you have to say whether the sniper is there or not. So the first turn of the Germans is that they, all three of them, say, I want to search my red area. Well, I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow's turn. I'll search the yellow area. Well, I'm not there. Okay. Black, I'll search this area. I was like, yeah, I'm here somewhere. So they all know I'm in the black section. So now it's like, well, it's my turn because I've used like the two actions, all of them.
Mm.
So am I going to now dart out of this area? Am I going to do something in this area? They've already narrowed it down. So as we were discussing, it feels like the sniper is very disadvantaged and it is a struggle. I played it twice as a sniper and I struggled to even complete the first objective. Just because as soon as they've got a sniff of you, you're on the back foot straight away.
Yeah.
Unlike the Beast game, it felt like the Beast, okay, found him, but he's off again. It's like, sugar, where's he gone now? And he can actually move quite great, like depending what his powers are, but there's nothing. It always limits you to free spaces, and if you run and you go past people, then you've got to tell them that you heard this. If you play a card down, then it's basically like the sirens going off, masking my sound, so they know that. And it's clever. I think the Germans feel, they're quite strong, and it is very difficult. But I enjoyed it. I think I just might have to house rule some stuff if I play it again.
Yeah. I like the idea of the drawing from the bag and
almost
bag building.
It is almost bag building, a little bit of deck building, but and I like to pull them all like all at once, like, okay, that's five tokens. Because you usually say, I'm going to draw five tokens this turn. And then I slam them out on the table, and it's like, ah, shit, I missed. And they're looking, it's like, well, he's only drawn two aim out, so it means he needed three or more, so he's got to be within somewhere. So where is it? So they can pinpoint. It got really annoying because I played with my friends, Nigel and Karen and the wife. And like throughout it, Nigel was just saying, oh, it's just all luck. We're never going to get this. Never going to do this. All throughout the game, it's like, Nigel, you literally just found me within round two. Now you just need to kill me. And at one point, they could have killed me, I think in four or five. Because there's a sniper ability, which basically is the same as you, but they can't move and snipe. They can snipe and move. And there's line of sight things going on. A Jaeger. Basically, he can shoot or attack adjacent squares. And then there was a medic that the other one was playing. And they found me, they cornered me, and if they had just kind of, one person had gone in and attacked the location I was in and got one hit, and then the Jaeger came in and stood next to me and attacked that location, I would have been dead. But they didn't think of that. They just kind of sent guy in there, they shot me, and they're like, oh, what do we do now? Oh, he's just going to get away. And I'm just sat there going, please don't shoot me anymore. And then when they've done all their actions, I pulled out my shotgun and blasted the whole area, which killed all of them. And then ran away like a coward I was. But they still got me before I completed one objective. And then after like the next turn, they cornered me and just needed another hit on me. So again, I really enjoyed it. I just think, the needs a little bit of house ruling, I think, just to help the sniper out a little bit better. But I wonder, because there was a couple of expansions that came onto the Kickstarter, I do wonder if that really helps, would help it out, which is a pain if it does, but it's just probably one of those things.
There we go. No, so interesting. Have you played the video game that it's based on?
Yes. Oh, yes. How does it compare?
Yeah.
You're not going to get the gruesome, like, ball shot and things like that, though, to put into the video game, but it's got that same kind of vibe where you're kind of trying to sneak around to get to your objectives and get to certain parts and laying traps, because you can lay traps for the Germans to walk into, and using your arsenal. And then, yeah, just think, oh, yeah, I've got a good shot on him. Right, I'll have a go. And the better shooting you do, the better you can, like, improve your aim. It's not complete board game, not complete video game relation, but it's
it gives that feel concept. Though.
It does, mm-hmm. yeah.
Cool, that's good, yeah.
So, awesome.
Very nice, cool.
So that was it. Okay. New little bit we're adding in, mainly because I feel bad that I haven't done this already. So when we did episode 100, I was a little bit kind of worried that we weren't getting any questions in, so I started hitting people up for questions. And I was playing with old Lewis Holt, the one of the other hosts that doesn't like to do it anymore. And I said to him, just send a question in, and we'll do it on the 100 podcast. And he did send a question or two or three or 10 after we recorded the podcast. And then I forgot all about it until he said, well, this was a waste of my time, in another message. I was like, oh, yeah. But then reading through his questions, some of them are very in-depth. And we don't feel like we can give them justice, like trying to do them all in one episode. So what we're going to do is take one each episode and put some time into it, because there is some good questions he's actually asked here. But I'm going to reel off a couple just to get them out of the way.
Where's going?
Yeah. One is, why is Tapestry still in your collection? I think that's a real dig at me. After we played 5-player game of it at the North Devon Gaming Weekend. And it's still in my collection, Lewis, because I like that game, unlike you. So, I don't
care. It's still in my collection, too. I enjoy it. I recognise the imbalance in some factions in the game. But I sort of enjoy playing it. It's nice and very simple mechanics. And you've got lots of civs to explore if you want to replay it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Have you got all the expansions?
All except the last one.
I really want to play I've got the last one. I really want to play it. And they actually
have a game.
Yeah, they actually state don't play civs and capitals mixed in with previous ones. They just kind of say it makes it a little bit unfair. So yeah, I really want to just play Tapestry.
They're trying to balance it. Yeah. We'll have to have a game at some point, Joel.
Yeah, just definitely. And then question of this week, as we're running over a bit, which gaming mechanism is your favorite and which one is your least favorite to use? Sam, I wonder what your favorite would be.
I think the easy answer would be deck building, but I don't think it actually is deck building because of Clank. but actually, that's the easy way out. And actually, I think, to be honest, when I look, I should really sort of assess it based on all my board game collection. But instinctively, I say worker placement is my favourite, I think, because it always feels like you're doing something on a board, which is probably why Clank deck building always kind of stands out for me because of Clank, because Clank intrinsically involves doing something on a board, where most things with deck building, you're not really doing anything on a board. You're doing stuff with cards and playing hands and shuffling, and that's about it. So actually, I think probably worker placement would actually qualify as my favorite mechanic. My least favorite, I would say, is anything that involves negotiation. if I see negotiation as a mechanic on a board game listing on BGG, I'm instantly out. So I'm doing my Spiel des Jahres kind of list from the preview on BGG at the moment. And it sort of just gives you, on the bottom of each one, it just says what the mechanics are. And that's kind of what I judge it by, either by the artwork or by the mechanics that it lists. And if it says negotiation, I'm out, completely out. And it's also the same with like area control or combat based stuff, the same sort of reasons, really. I think ultimately while I've talked about how I would like more player interaction in stuff like Planet Unknown, I don't like that kind of player interaction because it inherently always feels like it's personal sometimes. It feels like it's more of a meta game when you're playing with certain people, and I don't enjoy that kind of
Yeah, that's true. It's very group dependent, I suppose.
Yeah.
That kind of game. Mm.
My one.
Oh,
that's what you're doing.
Yep, go for it, Joel.
All right. My one. I was thinking the same terms as Sam, like deck building should be top, but I don't think it is. I do have quite a few deck building. It's, yeah. And then worker placement, again, I do like a good worker placement game. But looking at my collection, I think area control is like one of mine. Like Blood Rage. Love Blood Rage. Haven't played it for a while. Need to play that. But love Blood Rage. And I do love Viral, which is like basically you're a bacteria virus kind of thing trying to kill off this human being. You're just trying to conquer different sections of the body. I think it's a brilliant game. And just looking at a couple others, Rococo. It's actually an area control game, but you're making dresses and trying to put your dress on a high class personality to get into the print, into the palace. And it's just like, oh, it's area control, isn't it? And there's quite a few, like you start looking, it's like, oh yeah, that's kind of area control as well. So I think that'd be one of my favorites. Least favorite, social deduction games. Hate social deduction games.
Actually, I hear you on that, yeah.
Oh, I mean, our group.
And again, they are very group dependent.
Yeah.
They do love their social deduction. There is a faction of them. They play Secret Hitler if they could all the time. Oh,
don't talk to me about that. I hate that game. Absolutely hate it. I went to a group in Plymouth where they said they would play board games, and we just played Secret Hitler all night. I was just I got some food, I sat down, and they was like, right, we're going to do another round. I was like, please, no. I'm so sick of it. And it's the same jokes as well that go round. I'm just like, I thought there was
other games
you
get to a level of where it's a meta game, because they're referencing previous games of it or something, isn't it? Social deduction can be very, very group dependent, and some of, if you don't enjoy that kind of thing. So my friend Chris from the game group doesn't, he can't stand them because he can't lie convincingly at all, which ruins most social deduction games for him.
I mean, there was when it, what were we playing? Avalon. We were playing that, and we were playing that quite a lot each time at the Exeter game night years and years ago when it's popular. And there was a point where I knew who you know who your partner is, and he had already been sussed out, and they already eliminated him. And then I was like, well, I just need to win the fourth round, and we've done this. But I thought, no, I'm going to extend this game, and I completely didn't do it, and it really confused the guy that was running it. He was like, have I done this right? And I was like, what are you doing? He was like, I think I've set it up wrong. I said, you haven't set it up wrong. You now just ruined it because you've looked through all the other components. And he was like, but why did you not do it? I said, what says I have to do it? Yeah. I said, I've got five rounds. I was like, so I was just doing what I wanted to do. It didn't mean I have to actually complete it there. Well, no, that's not how the game's played. It's like, show me in the rules where I have to do it there and then. And oh my goodness. I was like, that's it, I'm done now. I'm not playing this anymore. If you're not going to let it play like that, then what's the fun in it? So, Yeah, I really try and avoid those as much as possible.
I don't mind an occasional search deduction game, but they can wear thin after, especially if you do more than one in a night. That's too much. Yeah. My favourite game mechanic, I think I'm going to have to copy Sam. It's going to be worker placement, I think. And this goes back to, I think, the earliest, or the first proper modern hobby war game that I played was Carcassonne. And that blends worker placement and area control really, really, really well. And so I love how worker placement games work. About the tension of stealing a space from someone else. And it's not so much in Carcassonne because you're not stealing them, but you're kind of claiming that section for yourself. But other ones are where you are denying other people that choice. So something like Stone Age, where you can steal the spaces. Love worker placement and all those kind of that style of game. Least favorite. That's difficult. There are lots that I don't really like playing, but I will play. But I think the one I like the least in game designs is player elimination, which you don't see from these days. I think the only game I own with player elimination, I'm not including Monopoly in that, is King of Tokyo. And I've seen that go badly in a couple of games where a lot of the players, we were playing, I think, six players, and all but two of the players were eliminated within probably 20 minutes. And the game carried on for another 45 minutes. And the other players, what else do they do? There's four players doing absolutely nothing for 45 minutes watching you play. It's not fun.
It's a blessedly, blessedly kind of infrequent occurrence, but we've had that happen.
Most of the time, King of Tokyo is fine, but it can drag on with the last two players if you're not careful.
I think they should. Have it something. Surely, I thought there was something introduced where when it gets around to them again, they roll dice and see how many hits they are. They can.
I don't wonder if that's in the revised edition. I've still only got the very first version of it. But that was in it. I don't know if they changed it for the newer version.
Little things like that just keep the games in, like Clank. Keep going banging on about it, but like when it gets around to people that have either got out or been eliminated, they like, right, you draw four cubes from the bag, and it's just like, oh, I've got to survive you and you before it gets around to my turn. Can I survive this
It keeps you engaged in the game.
It does.
It's something to do.
One of those things where, like, if you manage to kill somebody off, you're like, you got, the ones that are out are willing the cubes to come out. The ones that are still on the board are desperate for them not to. And it adds to the drama of the game, doesn't it? That's another reason why it's always popular.
It's the kind of mechanic that you can engineer out of a design. King of Tokyo, I think the idea was that it was light enough that it didn't matter. And a lot of games, modern games which have it, they are quick games, so it doesn't matter if you're eliminated for 5 minutes. But something like Monopoly, which is, it's meant to be a 90-minute game. But realistically, let's say it's 2 hours. That game should end when the first person goes bankrupt, rather than waiting to the last person standing, because it's boring otherwise.
You do the timer. You do 90 minutes, like what they do in the World Championship.
Yeah. Whoever's got the most. I don't think that'll make Monopoly any better necessarily, but it would make it less boring for the people who eliminated it.
So anyway, that's a different subject. Anyway,
indeed.
So yes, there we
are. Good question, Lewis.
Two out of 10 questions answered. Hope you live long enough to see the rest of them. I'm kidding. You're not that old. Not really. He's all right. Anyway, right. Get into the end. Any other business? I think I'm the only one that's going to bring stuff to the thing. So
I can put something in. You talk about yours.
I can't believe Nick's picked up my mistake in this. So I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Oh, I didn't even say. You missed the U and the I.
So yeah, I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the
Galaxy. Because it's on Disney Plus, and I loved it. It's brilliant. It really bring a knife ending to the series. Yes, I cried multiple times throughout, so it's really nice. But some good tying up of stuff, but also there's a few things left open, so it's not the end.
I saw it too. I enjoyed it.
Awesome.
I thought it was. I think you have to probably rewatch Infinity War to understand a lot of the links going on.
Yeah.
A lot of, they pick up the storyline basically straight from almost from after Endgame.
Did you watch the Christmas holiday special?
No. Which my daughter said, that. Oh, there's stuff in that as well.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, yeah, there's links to this as well. But I enjoyed it. Yeah. I thought it was very good.
I saw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem movie. The Seth Rogen. Is it Seth Rogen? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw it at in 4D and watched it in 3D. So 4D is where like the atmosphere and your chairs move and things like that. And they're throwing water at you and blasting air from your seats and things like that, really making you feel like you're in a roller coaster of a movie. And then the 3D, yeah, it's again with the glasses. Now the 3D adds to this movie. It really, the animation, the 3D was so good. It like really made it feel like it popped out, and like there's real depth to the cartoon.
That'd be amazing.
It was really good. 4D. I would like to put seatbelts on these chairs. At one point,
were you flying out?
Oh, I thought I was going to see kids flying out of their seats at one point. And I'm pretty sure I came out with an injury. it was so violent. It was... I'm sure like someone's like programmed this in. Like, oh, yeah, we'll do this and do this. And then someone's come along and like exactly said, no, let's turn it up to 20 kind of thing and make this horrendous. Oh, my God. There's one... point. It went bang, bang, forward and back, and I felt like I'd been hit in the chest. And I was just like, oof.
Wow.
But it's like when it's like that, it's actually quite off putting to the movie, and I wasn't enjoying it because of that.
Indeed.
And so I don't know if I could actually do 4D anymore.
I think 4D, I would only want to do 4D with a film I already know inside out, so watching.
Oh, that would be quite fun.
A film, like, especially if it's comedies and stuff, where it's just, it all adds to the atmosphere. I can imagine it working, but I would never go and watch a film I've never seen before in there, because I just think, yeah, like say, I can't help but feel it would just take me out of the experience more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I literally walked out of the cinema. I got up, walked down the steps, just getting out the door, and my knees just suddenly went, like, locked on me, and I was just like, I can't move my knee. And then it was agony to stand on. And then by, because I've got out the double doors of the cinema we were in, there's a sofa right in front of me. I was like, I've got to sit down. And I was just sat there, like, rubbing my knee. I was like, what? Where's this coming from? And then I made it to the Starbucks that was across the landing, and I was able to sit in there and have a coffee and enjoy that. But, like, yeah, I was like, it went away a couple of days, but it actually came back yesterday morning. Like,
oh, right.
I just got out of bed, and then I was just like, oh, there's that pain again in my knee. So I was hoping Dr. Lewis was here and he could give me a consultation over the podcast. And...
a free consultation.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if it was from that, but it was just a coincidence that I hadn't had that. And then I came out of that after being beaten up by a movie. so that was it. Good movie, good. Really good script. There's some real twists in the story compared to what I know of the two turtles. I really love the Nickelodeon one they did recently. Character voices put me off, because there were some really weird choices they used for the voices, and I was just like, I don't know if I like these. I don't think my boy was a massive fan of the Nickelodeon version. And he even came out saying, I didn't like Michelangelo in that. He was a bit weird and off and things like that. I was like, yeah, I know what you mean. So, but yeah, good story, good twists. Maybe cool. Need to consider the voices. But anyway, and my last one, video game I want to bring in. It's called A Short Hike. it's another one of these kind of Zen kind of games where you're this character and you've basically been challenged to climb to the top of this mountain, but you've got to work your way up to it. You've got to go meet other people and do little tasks for them and get stuff off of them before you can even make it up to the peak, and kind of build yourself up to that. And there's like little stories going on of why people are there, and it's quite beautiful and zany. The one thing
it's lovely, really, your little bird is that.
Yeah, the one thing that got me is like when I put it on and started playing it, like it was really big pixels, and I just thought that's how the game was made. Excited. And right. I was just like, and I played a good few hours on this, and I actually thought, oh, I'm really my eyes were really struggling with it, and I was just like, I feel quite ill. And then I was stuck on something, so I went to YouTube to find out where I find this thing I'm looking for. And I was like, why do their pixels look nice and smooth? What am I doing wrong? And I went into the options, and you can set the pixels down to like whatever size you want it. I was like, and I set it right down to small. I was like, oh my goodness, why did I not do that in the first place? And now I was like, I can see stuff. I know what I'm doing. It was like beforehand, it was so pixelated. I was like, Is that what it is? All right.
And that was the default setting. That's all.
That's default massive pixel. It literally says massive big pixels. I was just like, no, I want tiny minuscule pixels. Thank you.
Maybe they were just trying to go for that style or something.
But
clearly a design choice to do it.
Yeah.
It's on Xbox Game Pass. It looks like
that's what I'm playing it on.
So I thought I might try that at some point.
It looks very cute.
I'm still trying to get through Witcher 3 for the second time, so it might take a while.
Yeah, I need to load that up again and do that. But anyway, so that's my stuff.
Cool. Just one from me, which is a newish online game store, which specializes in importing games from places that would be usually be expensive or hard to get from. So certain places in the US and Asia. So especially things like Taiwan and Japan, and those kind of places. So it imports quite a lot of small box games, like trick-taking games, which would otherwise be a bit crazy expensive to ship. I picked up a copy of Bridge City Poker the other day from there, and some regular deck of cards, some bicycle cards. It was lovely. And the guy who runs it sent a little handwritten note saying thank you for this, and then I've included some rules for the game Haggis, which is just a trick-taking game you can play with a traditional deck of cards. So we went that far as to like print off some rules to suggest a game to play. So it was really nice. Highly recommend checking them out.
I've been waiting for an excuse to be able to order something from from his site, because there's a Japanese game I've been after for a while. Not been trying hard, but I've seen it before.
Would have liked. If it
would
was
have
more
liked. If I'd seen it, I'd have picked it up, and it's called Nikosi Dice, which is a kind of, I think it's like a almost trick-taking, but with dice game kind of mix, which is...
Yeah, it's got half cards and half dice, I think, isn't it?
So I was like, that sounds quite fun. And I think after I mentioned it to it, I messaged him on Facebook, and he said he'd sort of see if he can get some in. But since then, I've also seen that he's got the Korean version of Can't Stop, and that looks amazing too.
Yeah, it does.
I've got the Japanese version, and I love the Japanese version, but the Korean version looks better. And I'm trying not to go and spend £36 on a simple game I've already got.
Think how much you're saving for not shipping it yourself.
What I love is that they got an expansion for I forgot what it's called now. The submarine game.
Deep Sea Adventure.
Deep Sea Adventure. And it's like one dice.
It looks like I think there are extra cards as well. I saw that because it's a box with a dice in it, and that's all it looks like.
That is all it is.
All there is.
They got it at the games at UK Games Expo last year. Oink Games had it then, and they've got it. They weren't doing it this year, so I guess that's why it's imported now. But it is just a one extra die in a little tiny dice tray, I think.
It replaces your two dice using the standard Deep Sea Adventure with this expansion dice. The expansion dice has two special rolls printed on it, times three number, and a...
That's right. So if you rolled a three, I'm trying to remember what the numbers are on the standard D6s, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think so. Basically, you could have times three and get a four or whatever, and it was actually 12, and then you're knackered because you've gone way too far down, and all that sort of, I think that's the idea of it. It mixes it up. I have to be honest, I got it, and then I haven't used it because it looked like it was probably a bit of a mess. it's three, so it can go up to nine. Sorry, yeah. So it's two 18 ones, two
quid
two
for like one dice.
Yeah. And I think it was 8 or 10 quid when it was at the expo last year. So it was still expensive, what it is really. But if you're a completist, like some of our listeners must be, then it's something that I'm sure that someone shouldn't justify.
Can't do without. Yeah.
I was gonna say it's just nice to have a store that specialises a little bit in games that you wouldn't find anywhere else. Like
absolutely.
Apart from a handful of like
a UK based store as well, which is
exactly cool. Yeah. Yeah. It's quite nice to have a little look-see and just think, oh, that looks interesting now and again.
Talking of websites.
So segueing nicely, Joel, well done, into the website update. So as I was called the IT guy for the podcast at the start, it's just to say that we're going to have a little bit of a refresh of the website soon. I've been working away at it. Nothing dramatic, just tidying things up. And I'm hoping that I'll get a chance to finish that this week. So by the time we record the next episode, our website should look a little bit smarter and a little bit more readable, hopefully.
And in no way copies Shut Up and Sit Down
any
podcast.
No. Yeah,
like Lewis made Sam panic earlier in the week. Oh, it looks like Shut Up and Sit Down's website.
Yeah, but thankfully it doesn't look anything like it. So thanks for that. Thanks for that scare, Lewis.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
So yeah, thank you, Sam. It really did need a kind of tidy up and update. So yeah.
Well, the good thing is I'm now the gatekeeper for everything that will go on it. So there'll be. I'm sure I'll have plenty of work, but I'll just be kind of tidying up a lot of the stuff, so it's a little bit more indexable and searchable, and things like tags will be a little bit more useful to discover sort of extra content. So yeah, we'll see how it goes, but it will hopefully be launching at the end of the week, and we'll sort of see how everyone feels about it then.
Definitely.
Cool. Pretty cool.
Awesome. Right, I think we are done. We are done.
We've reached the end of the script.
I am so tired. Anyway, right, let's close this up and I can go to sleep. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you want to make a comment, leave a suggestion of something we could do on the podcast, send your messages in. Send your questions in on the Discord channel, and you'll definitely definitely be read out from that. Even if you have a question, or send it in other places, that'd be fine. Anything we've talked about on this show will be found in the show notes, and our Nick has diligently
that's the word.
Put all the links in. So use his good hard work to good use. I'm really not making sense now. This if I didn't before, I really am not now when I realise it. Anyway. So yes, thank you for listening. Do join the Discord channel. Do check out the new site when it's launched. There'll be prompts and everything on our social media sites. I'm hopefully going to start doing more content for the website itself. I've got stuff in the pipeline. And we've got hopefully got loads of stuff coming up. As we said, next show, hopefully a good guest. We've got Essen coming up. So I am going with the wife. And we're going to do our top games that we would like from Essen, or see at Essen.
On that note, how much room have you got in your bag?
I was about to say to you guys at the end of it, we're traveling by car, so we're going to have plenty of room.
Only reason
get your list ready, Sam.
I'm wondering whether Pandasaurus are going to have Fox Experiment Deluxe there. That's what I'm waiting for.
Okay.
So yeah, I might send you via Pandasaurus, and if they've got the deluxe one, bag it for me, please.
Okay. I will try. So check out our Essen lists will be coming up, hopefully before Essen itself. So that's what we got planned for the show. So I'd like to say thank you to the guys for joining me tonight and giving up their time.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
And goodbye from me.
And goodbye from us.
That was a little joke from many years ago.
Yep. Goodbye. Good night for me. Good night for him.
Even Joel, I think, is probably too young for that joke.
I know what they're on about.
Oh, that's right.
Two Ronnies, isn't it?
That's the key.
Yeah, see? Not. I am that old, actually.
Yeah.